Ben, why don't you start us off?
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you. Welcome to the first ever loan approval committee of the Utah Inland Port Authority. We have a few matters of business to get this committee going, and then we'll get into the loan application that is the purpose of this meeting and of this committee. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to have Carol Watson come up and give the oath of office to our four members. We do have a fifth member that is going to be appointed. We are hoping to get him here today, but it doesn't look like, obviously, that's not going to happen. So we do have a five-member committee, and we'll get that fifth one appointed shortly.
Could I have y'all stand, please? I state your name. Raise your hand. Sorry. I state your name.
Have been elected or appointed.
To the office of. Authority Infrastructure Bank. Loan Approval Committee. Do solemnly swear or affirm. That I will support, obey, and defend. The Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of Utah. And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we'd like to have an election of a chair for this committee. And I will turn over to the committee to make a motion on that.
I would like to nominate Steve Allred as chair.
And I'll second that.
Okay. I'll just do a voice vote. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Excellent. Steve, I will turn the meeting over to you officially then.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So moving on to the next item on the agenda, which is the AIB or Authority Infrastructure Bank Policy Overview. I'll turn that over to Amy Brown Coffin for presentation.
Great. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. So within your board packet, you have a copy of AIB, which is BP 13. This is a UIPA board approved policy that was put in place April 4th. I just wanted to highlight some of the points within this policy as it pertains to this loan approval committee, specifically the responsibilities of our loan approval committee, as well as the requirements around an infrastructure loan. An infrastructure loan may not be made unless it is recommended by the loan committee and then subsequently approved by the UIPA board. The loan approval committee may also recommend the terms in accordance with 63A-3-404. Also, within statute, loans can be given priority on infrastructure loan requests that further the policy and best practices incorporated into the environmental sustainability component of the authority's business plan, according to 1158-202A. So those are some of the statutory highlights. Again, within the scope of how these infrastructure loans come to be and the due diligence that's done internally, we have an application process as well as internal, and this coverage is under the CFO, Ben Bies. As far as what is internally vetted, we've got applicant interviews, a technical financial analysis, a collateral analysis, credit reports and credit checks, and document verification and analysis. We've also established within this policy the loan criteria as far as eligibility, terms, creditworthiness, the collateral, and the use of funds. Within this, we also have the loan evaluation process. That's discussed in section 10. And would encourage you to read that thoroughly on what's been done and as well as the application documents that are collected internally as it's packaged together in presentation. At this point in time, you know, I'll pause if there's any questions on this policy, but wanted to provide this to the committee so that they're prepared, understand what due diligence is conducted and the process of these infrastructure loans and the journey that they take.
Amy, maybe I could just ask.
Yes.
Since this is the first time I've seen this, would you mind going through the loan criteria for us, even if you have to read it out loud to us?
Sure, happy to do so.
Just starting with eligibility there so we can, yes. And going to the end of that section. So we just
No, that's fine. This is page 5. And also, just to put this on the record, this policy is publicly available on our website at inlandauthority.utah.gov under the boards and committees, and then there's the board policies. So the loan criteria, just going through this, the AIB is accountable to policymakers and the public through enabling legislation with UCA 63A-3-4, the Infrastructure Revolving Loan Funds, and responsible for meeting all of its legal requirements and ensuring that projects have met the required standards prior to approval. So for eligibility, we have potential borrowers can be either public or private entities, and the project must be either located within an inland port project area or have direct beneficial impact on an inland port project area. At this time, we have what we consider two project areas, one within that northwest quadrant, what's also known as the jurisdictional land near the airport and surrounding that area. We also have the inland, the Iron Springs project area in Cedar City, which was recently approved at the beginning of this month. As far as terms go, terms including but not limited to include interest rate, repayment period, and fees will be determined and recommended by the loan committee. And so that's what we'd ask you to codify as you recommend a loan to move forward to the board. For creditworthiness, there's no minimum credit score required by potential borrowers. However, UIPI staff due diligence will determine the financial viability of the applicant. And we put in the application process some of the things that we look at internally, and certainly Ben Bias can expand upon as this next one is presented. As far as collateral is concerned, again, depending on creditworthiness, the applicant may be expected to have a minimum collateral percentage of the loan amount to be eligible to be reviewed by the loan committee. The loan committee may also require collateral above minimum requirements depending on the risk of the loan. And then as far as use of funds, per statute 1158-106-3B, if an infrastructure loan is to be secured by property tax differential, the funds from that loan must go towards a project located within an existing inland port project area that generates the property tax differential. Funds from an infrastructure loan through the AIB can be used to acquire land and building, construct and develop, reconstruction improvements, and rehabilitate and remediate. Any other questions I can answer at this time or clarify?
I have a question, Steve, if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead.
So I didn't see anything in the criteria, and maybe it's because this is specific to the loan and mm-hmm. not the whole process, but I don't see anything regarding procurement. Since we're dealing with private entities, I'm wondering how it is that a private entity gets the contract to be able to receive both subsidized loans that we will be granting today, tax increment, as well as revenues in the future from operation of the infrastructure. I'm wondering about procurement. Can you tell me about that process?
We have a separate procurement policy. It doesn't define as this relates. Ben Baez, I know that you, do you have anything to elaborate as you are close to this internal evaluation?
Yeah, we haven't required a procurement policy for a developer that may be receiving increment. To this point, that's not been something we've done.
So you're saying that the company today did not go through procurement, that there was no competitive bid on this infrastructure to be able to receive governmental funds or loans? Am I understanding that correctly?
So the developer owns the property that the Inland Port Project area was created around. As such, to develop that, they'll have to put in the needed infrastructure. So is the question on the procurement of the company or their procurement of the construction of that infrastructure?
Okay, so the company that we're is not doing the construction. You're saying the company that we're providing the loan to today is not the same entity that will be doing the construction. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, they will be in charge of it, but I'm sure they won't be actually putting in the sewer line and the streets and stuff like that. So they would hire a company to put in that infrastructure.
Okay. So I guess my question is, because we're using state money, right? So I want to make sure that we're not using state money to pick a private entity who gets a windfall from this project, right? Like, there should be, because we're using state money, to me, there should be some sort of procurement policy in place to ensure that where state money is used, that there's a competitive landscape in order to procure that. That's my concern.
And you're talking about the selection of BZI as the kind of developer of the area?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, so because they are the owner of the land where the Inland Port Project area was created, they're the only company available to do that. So similar to redevelopment agencies that a city may do anywhere in the state, they usually have a developer that they're working with in a similar manner to this project.
Okay, so it was known at the time that they procured the land for this offsite part of the port that the government would back this private entity in developing it, and that would all be done with no procurement?
So this started as a RDA project with Iron County. They were working it through. They had done much of the negotiation. A few months ago, they approached us. We partnered with them to create an inland port project area rather than having Iron County do that. So as to the beginnings of the negotiations, I can't speak to that, but once we came in, it was known that it was going to be this owner, yes.
Is there any property in the project area that is not owned by this company?
Yeah, so there is a parcel that is owned by Savage that is part of the Inland Port Project area as well. So it's across Iron Springs Road, and it does have that other part is owned by another entity.
Did Savage express any interest in competing or being part of the receiving a loan?
They're not as far along in their plans. They also want to do a transloading facility, on their portion on their property. They'd focus more on some other materials, but they may approach us for an infrastructure loan at some point, but again, they're not as far along.
Okay.
The path.
Okay. And we can discuss this more when we get to the next agenda item. I think we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. Okay. Any other questions for Amy?
So, I think that the terms of the interest rate are specified in statute. It's the state's borrowing rate plus 0.5%, I think.
Not to exceed 5%.
Not to exceed 5.5%. However, the term, I think, is going to be up to the loan committee. Is that my understanding?
Correct.
Okay. So I'll have more questions, I guess, for the applicant when that happens.
Okay, very well. Any other questions before we move on? Okay, thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
All right, welcome, Ben Hart. All right, agenda item number 5 is consideration of the loan application by BZI Steel. I don't know, Ben, are you going to brief us on this one?
Yeah, I'll start off. Richard and I will kind of explain what we're looking to do and then open up for questions. And then we also have Ryan Obrey here as well, that can respond to questions for the company. So, the inland port project area that was created, we created last month, our inland port board created that at the board meeting last month. And we presented a project area plan and budget to them. I just want to read you one portion of that as it relates to the transloading facility. It says, currently the nearest transloading facility to Iron County is a bulk transloading facility in Salt Lake City. The nearest facility servicing containers is even further away in San Bernardino, California. This new Iron County facility will provide services to Iron County as well as neighboring Washington, Beaver, Millard, Sevier, Paiute, Garfield, and Kane counties. Additional benefits include reduced export costs and shipping time to West Coast ports. The transloading facility on the Commerce Crossroads portion, that's where we're talking, will support transfer of dimensional freight such as containers, bulk steel, and construction equipment. The facility on the Savage Rail Port, Southern Utah portion, will transfer bulk commodities such as dry bulk, liquid bulk, and construction products. This is really where the AIB loan is useful to us, is getting these port logistic facilities up and going. This will help with a better utilizing the rail that's in Iron County, again, providing a transloading facility that nowhere in the region has access to right now. So everything is having to be trucked out to ports. This will provide a new way of transporting containers and bulk freight to those ports in California and other places. So that's kind of the status of where we're at right now with that inland port project area just being created last month. This loan committee is the first in a three-step process. So what we're looking for today is a recommendation to the inland port board on this loan. It also must be approved by Legislative Executive Appropriations Committee before this can be loaned to the company. So based on some estimates, and again, I know there's been some questions about the tax increment that will be going to this project area. So the necessary railroad sewer utility type of infrastructure that's necessary for this project area is what the tax increment is going to be paying for. So it's public infrastructure that is needed to get this site up and running. So right now it's just greenfield. There's nothing on the site right now. So the tax increment will help to pay for those necessary public infrastructure improvements. The rail, including this transloading facility, is over $13 million. What our recommendation is a $10 million loan. The request is to have that deferred for 3 years, and that'll help get them to a place where some of the construction is being built. It'll allow some increment to start being collected over that 3 years. We do recommend that be capitalized to the principal of the loan, and then a 15-year loan repayment after that three-year deferral. So that's kind of the basics of where we're at. If there's any questions for Richard or I, we can handle those. And then also, like I said, Ryan Obrey is here and can answer questions for the company.
Any questions? Kurt, go ahead.
Okay, so when you say deferred, are you talking about capitalizing the interest?
Exactly.
During the deferral period,
not
waiving the interest?
Correct.
Okay. And then at what point, so you mentioned that they will be able to charge fees on the infrastructure they're developing eventually, right? So it will generate revenue. Do we have any idea, or is there any projection on like when those revenues from the infrastructure will start to produce, I guess, when they'll start to be able to collect fees on the rail infrastructure that they're putting in?
I don't know. Ryan may have a better idea. Again, the transloading facility is really something that Commerce Crossroads recognized the need for their own purposes, to bring in steel in bulk as well as for shipping products out. But the infrastructure loan will also enable that to be a public transloading that anyone can come to and use. Again, it will be a fee that can be charged to those other companies, but it will open that up for other companies as well. So Ryan maybe has a better idea of how long they'll take to get that up and running and when that'd be open for other companies to come use.
Hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the intent is for the transload facility to be operational.
Brian, can I just interrupt you for a second? Will you just tell us your name and your title for, so we have it on the record?
Yeah, so Ryan Obrey, I'm the project executive for Commerce Crossroads. Work for BZI as well. So the intent is to have this transload facility operating this summer. One thing that I think would be helpful is give you a little, you know, I don't know who knows Iron County. Iron County had originally had a rail brought into it in 1923. In the 1970s, the rail access or the rail hub left Iron County, and there has not been a transload facility in Iron County since 1970. And so although there's some facilities that have rail access, nobody could get rail, no facility could get transload opportunities. So we're a steel erection company in Iron County. And we started this process by looking for 15 to 20 acres along the rail that we could buy just to bring rail in. And we discovered that nobody would give us access to rail and it didn't exist. So this has been about a 3-year process we've been working on and we thought rather than just solve the problem for us, we ought to solve it for the region. So our intent through this public-private partnership is to get transloading operations back in Iron County that have been gone since the 70s. And as a company, we can do a certain amount of lift, right? But the public-private partnership that we are experiencing with Utah Inland Port is going to be the lift that's going to be able to help the entire region rather than just help individual companies, which is what's been happening since the 70s. A few companies have access to rail. And if you aren't on that or you're not that company, you don't have access. And so that's kind of the vision behind how we got to where we are here is it will absolutely benefit us. We've been spending money bringing rail in, or we bring our material into Salt Lake and Phoenix and we truck it into Iron County. That's what we've been doing for the last 3 years. That's why we set out to find access on the rail. And it's kind of grown into this thing where, you know, it's turned into this public-private partnership where we can solve the issues for the entire community.
Any further questions?
Okay, so I do. Absolutely. Sorry, I'm dominating the conversation here. But okay, so you mentioned the public-private partnership, so and that other companies will be able to access the rail. Is that something you've signed contractually with the Inland Port Authority, or what's the guarantee that you give access to other companies within the region, I guess? Is that just like understanding?
Wow, so up to this point, there's no formal agreement. There's no formal it's that we will operate it and give access to other companies. We're already talking to several of them that have reached out to us that are interested in getting stuff off the rail. So the model will be like other transload facilities. There will be a fee to unload material for people.
Okay. So you'll get a collective fee on all of that, right? But you're saying the economics of that still doesn't pencil without help from the Inland Port. Is that what you're saying?
Without the infrastructure bank loan.
Right.
Yeah, the lift is different if without the infrastructure bank loan to be able to put in the infrastructure required.
Okay, so I'm guessing you've done some financial projections on ROI on this, right? And
yes, we have done some. I would say if you talk to most transload operators, it's not a highly lucrative business to transload.
Okay. Do you know what your ROI is expected on this project, or do you guys have that in a pro forma somewhere?
We don't have a pro forma built on that just because we do not have a pro forma on what the transload ROI will be.
I had a question in mind, and I don't know if I can remember what it was.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
As part of the tax increment distribution to Commerce Crossroads, we will be having an agreement with them. And I definitely think that we can put into that contract that this will be open to the public. Again, obviously, there'd be a fee involved, but we can include that in the contract with them as we work on that to share that tax increment with Commerce Crossroads.
I just remembered the other question I was going to ask. So this is a $10 million proposed loan. What is the total cost? Do we know what the total cost is and how much of that? If we're paying the $10 million, how much is being paid outside of the state loan? Any idea?
I was going to say, Ben, pass that information.
Yeah, so if we're looking at the total infrastructure needs for this property, it's about $70
million. Okay.
And they're bringing the remaining $70 million, or who's bringing the remaining $70
million? They will bring the remaining $70 million. And again, the tax increment, once it starts being collected, can be used to repay that.
Okay. Both that and the state loan, right?
Right.
Is there seniority given to the state loan over the $70 million?
Yes. Yeah.
So we have seniority in that financing structure.
Yeah. Right.
Ben, have you maybe give us just your assessment of the financial position the company's in?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did get the last 3 years of financials. We also got a letter of reference from their bank that they use. They use a few banks, but the bigger one that they use, or they use more often. All the financials that we can see are very strong. It indicates a company that has the liquidity as well as the revenues to repay this. I don't have any concerns based on the financial statements and the financial information that I've seen, that this would be an issue for the company going forward. We also have the tax increment that does backstop this loan. We do have that surety as well that there is a revenue source to repay, the infrastructure loan bank, regardless of what happens with the company, although we have no concerns with no. Always there's concerns when you're giving a loan, but we don't have any concerns based on the financial position of the company that this would be an issue to repay it.
Okay.
So maybe one more question along those lines. So if the transloading doesn't happen for whatever reason, you can't get that to come together and that doesn't materialize, do you have other revenue sources from which to repay the loan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I have a question. Are there any plans then to provide collateral on the loan if needed? And if so, what might that be?
Yeah, we discussed that based on the fact that we do have the tax differential backing it up. We haven't asked for any other pledged collateral for this loan.
Yeah, reading the policy does say the applicant may be expected to have a minimum collateral percentage of the loan amount. But in this case, the May is not so far.
Yeah, based on the revenues that the company's been bringing in and just their financial position overall, we did not feel that was necessary above and beyond the tax differential.
Okay. Duncan, do you have a question?
Yeah, question. I just wanted to confirm, I think this is the case. So as far as the cash flow of where the $10 million is coming from for the loan, I just need one of the Bens to confirm this, that there was a $60 million appropriation from the long-term capital project fund into the Inland Port Authority Fund. And so a portion of that $60 million is what's going to be used for this loan, correct?
That's exactly right, yes.
Okay.
And that was in Senate Bill 241 from last general session. Question I have, just piggybacking on Kurt's question about procurement, I don't know if it's our mission for this committee to determine legalities on procurement or not, but I still would like some comfort level there that this is following procurement policy or we're not going to regret delving into that more if we approve this loan today. So can you give me your feelings on that? How confident are you that this will meet procurement policy?
Are you talking about
selection of this particular company to receive this loan?
Yeah, really there's no other company that can, again, we have the transloading facility, across the street in Savage that may get built in the future. In terms of who can build a transloading facility, it's really a sole source issue on this one because Commerce Crossroads does own that property They are doing the development there. So to get this transloading facility there, we do have to work with them. Certainly it's in their best interest as well as the state's if they, build that, to the best possible price, and not expend extra dollars on that, certainly.
Duncan, do you have a question?
I just say too, cause it seemed to me like a lot of that probably you can confirm this case, a lot of that process is, the Inland Port Authority designates a project plan area. And so this is the land within that area. And most of the discussion on should we make this an area already happened with the full board in a previous meeting. Correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah. We had the project area plan budget that I was reading from. We had two meetings where this was, reviewed by the board and then approved by the board in March.
April?
The end of the month.
Okay. Any other questions or discomforts?
So on general process, because we talk about us as the loan approval committee approving a loan. We have like the generalities of what that loan would, like it's $10 million and then how the interest rate would be set and what'd be pledged, but we don't have like a formal like loan document in front of us. So how do we view this working? Like, cause and we're just one of three steps for the approval. Like at what point, does that turn into a more formal like document that, and obviously like when you close on a loan, there's like, I don't know, hundreds of pages
right.
of closing documents, but for like the general terms of the loan, like when do those go into writing? Is the expectation that we as a committee approve all those like specific terms, or is it more we're saying like, hey, generally this looks good, but we expect before the full authority approves it or executive appropriations approves, like at some point it has to turn into a written terms document of the loan. Like when do we foresee that happening?
Yeah, that's a great question. So maybe Jonathan is the best person to answer this. So the loan is actually financed by the Division of Finance. So once the loan is approved, they will do the actual loan document and get those signatures and set up the schedule for repayment. Is that right, Jonathan? Anything?
Yeah, what I don't know is if we have like a draft of what that, because we, historically the Division of Finance has not done the application process for a loan, or we generally receive all signed documents in the past, as that was where all the signed documents, and we put them into our loan system. So this would be new for us to have more of that origination side of it on the loan. So I don't know that we have a formal document designed yet for this, but.
And we can certainly be involved in that process as well. MIDA does these loans, and we've worked with them a lot on the process that they follow. So we certainly can get some help, on seeing what's been done in the past and duplicating that process to some extent.
Maybe I could just read a couple of things from Senate Bill 241. It talks about the creation of this committee, and then it says, this being the loan committee, it says the loan committee may recommend for board approval, the board being the overall Inland Port Board, an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Fund. And the Inland Port Fund is the Inland Port Infrastructure Revolving Loan Fund. To a borrower for an infrastructure project undertaken by the borrower, then it says an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port may not be made unless the infrastructure loan is recommended by the loan committee. Then skipping down, if the loan committee recommends an infrastructure loan, the loan committee shall recommend the terms of an infrastructure loan in accordance with Section 63A through 404. So if we were to recommend this loan, we would also be responsible to recommend the terms of that loan. And looking in Statute 63A3404 says that an infrastructure loan shall bear interest at a rate not to exceed 0.5% above bond market interest rates available to the state. So talking to the Treasurer's Office, it appears that the state's bond market rate is currently close to 3%, very close to 3%, maybe slightly less. So if we were to go with those terms, this would be a terms of approximately 3.5% interest. And then Ben, you're talking about this being a 15-year loan with three of those years being capitalized, having capitalized interest. So, is that correct?
So we, the proposal would be to do a 3-year deferral and then start a 15-year repayment at that point.
18 years
total. Yes. Thank you for clarifying.
And then those first 3 years, they would capitalize the interest. It becomes part of the principal and they pay it back with interest. So it's really compound interest on those first 3 years.
Okay. Question. So is that term acceptable to BZI? Does that sound within something that you would feel comfortable with?
Yeah.
And then I guess my next question is the infrastructure that's going in there. Obviously, we don't want to extend a loan beyond the life of the infrastructure, but I'm assuming everything that you're putting in there would have a useful life that goes at least 18 years.
Yes.
Right. Thank you.
Like we're not going to, you're not going to be paying back on infrastructure that's, you know, fully appreciated, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So it's like rail and, you know, I think those are long life assets. So
they tell me the wooden's 50 years, cement 100 years. So
okay, great.
Ben or either Ben, have you compared this to other infrastructure loans being made by other entities? How is this compared to like MIDA or Department of Transportation?
Yeah, the Department of Transportation, they certainly have some very large infrastructure loans, a similar length usually. They have some smaller ones and some shorter ones. They do have much larger loans, as well as they do have loans that go out 15 years. So I think it's pretty comparable from that standpoint. The big difference with the UDOT Infrastructure Bank is they're lending to cities typically, so it's a little different than lending to a private company, but in terms of amounts and duration, we feel like we're in the same ballpark.
So, can I make a comment there, Steve? So I actually staff the State Finance Review Commission, which actually recently looked at all the revolving loan programs. Jonathan was a part of that meeting. He's on that State Finance Review Commission as well, and pretty much all the UDOT loans are 15-year loans. The language about 0.5% above, you know, state borrowing cost is exactly the language that's in there for them as well. So this is very, very close. I guess one differentiation is those all go to other municipal entities or local governments. They don't typically go to a private entity. So I think that's why maybe I feel like we need to scrutinize this just a little bit more, because it's unusual, I think, for the state to have a revolving loan program that goes to private entities versus other local governments, right? Most of the other revolving loan programs are for other local governments that are serving a public interest. And I realize there's a public benefit here, but it's also going to a private company, and there's you know, private interests involved. And so I think that's why a little extra scrutiny is warranted in this case.
Absolutely. So I maybe could use a little more background on how the tax increment, when it's received, how do you determine how much? That's something I'm not totally familiar with, but just to understand like what that revenue source or that looks like.
So the tax increment works, when we adopted the project area, when our board adopted the project area earlier this month, that locks in the base year as being 2022. So it's the year before the project area was adopted. So the way the tax increment worked is any tax increment that is paid, we're talking property taxes, any property tax that's paid, as that property goes up in value, is the increment that we're talking about. So, the inland port statute says that project areas that we adopt are 25 years and we get 75% of the tax increment, with the other 25% being returned to the taxing entities. So the big ones here are, Iron County School District and Iron County itself. So we've not actually triggered it. So the couple of dates that are important are a creation date, which is, April 2023, and then a trigger date. So, we won't actually start collecting the increment until our board triggers this project area. So we're thinking about 2025 as the likely trigger date for that. That allows some infrastructure to get built. If we trigger it right now, When taxes are paid end of this year, there'll be very little, if any, increment because development has not really occurred on that site yet. So by waiting till 2025 to trigger it gives a chance for some infrastructure to get put in and the property values to go up, which allows a bigger increment to be collected. So in 2025, there's no difference for Commerce Crossroads. They'll pay their property taxes as they always do to Iron County. Iron County will collect those, and then 75% of what they collect will be remitted to us instead of the taxing entities. And the theory kind of behind tax increment is that by doing this, we help grow the area faster and bigger in ways that wouldn't occur without this sort of private investment or public investment. So if the tax increment isn't available for the developer to do that, it may take many years to develop out. They may develop it out smaller than they would have without those revenues that they can receive on the back end. So as we collect that tax increment, we do collect an admin fee for that. That's very typical in the RDA world. There's also 10% that will be given to Iron County for affordable housing. Again, that's very typical. Although it's not in our statute, it is very typical for redevelopment agencies to have a 10% amount go to affordable housing. That's something that's important for Iron County. And we've really wanted to work with them, really following their lead on where they want these revenues directed. So we are going to do that. And then the rest of that will go towards these public infrastructure developments within the project area. That's kind of all over the place. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. As a follow-up, do you know about how many jobs this might create for those that live in Iron County or thereabouts?
So it's several thousand. There's 8.6 million square feet of industrial space planned in the park, as well as about 1 million square feet of other space. So it's a 25-year build-out. It's a big project for Iron County, but Iron County was the fastest-growing county in the state last year. So it's going to be several thousand jobs that will be brought in by this development.
And if I can add to that, part of our project area plan had some project area performance indicators that we're going to be tracking, jobs created, as well as high-paying jobs were some of the value, the indicators that we're looking at, as well as the commodity flow from this facility, as well as in the county itself. So this is something that we want to track and make sure that we are getting what we expect out of this project area and this transload facility specifically as well.
Any other questions? Ben, did you want to say something?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I can just interject very, very briefly. First, thank you for all of you for being here today. I'm incredibly sorry for being a few minutes late. I did want to say genuinely, this is, you know, the first committee, obviously, that we're putting together. We want to do this in a way that is going to make this committee comfortable and assured. So as we get into this process, please know that we're going to take everything that you're saying in terms of feedback and implementing that into how this process is going to flow to make sure that we're giving you a product that you're very comfortable putting your seal on. I also just wanted to acknowledge we have an incredible committee. We're very fortunate that each of you are willing to serve, and we really appreciate that. I will say, as we are looking at the tax increment part of this, we see this more and more as a common methodology that cities are using. Growth is becoming so and so expensive. So trying to bear that cost for these communities, as we've been working with them, the economic thought and theory into the whole inland port concept is really, really important. And so in essence, what we're talking about is the city has to give us a resolution, meaning it's their money we're playing, not playing with. I don't want to simplify it, but it's their money that they're pledging to this project. To the developer to help with infrastructure as a backstop potentially for the loan. And so we want to make sure that we're doing right by the community. Now, on the state side, we realize those are state dollars, and so we also want to do on the right side of the state as well. But we realize that these types of public-private partnerships are probably going to become more and more common. The thing that we feel like we're really doing different here is this ability to enhance the rail. And we hear about this all day. You know, shippers, not only in this region, but across the state, are just totally dependent on the roadway. And so we're seeing trucks and trucks and trucks on the road. As a quick stat, I heard about air freight the other day. 92% of air freight that leaves the state of Utah actually leaves on trucks to other airports, whether it's LAX, Denver, or Chicago, because we don't have the facilities here in the state of Utah to capture that. So it's a similar situation when we're talking about road and rail. So as we're talking about not just how do we help communities invest in their future, but how do we do so in a sustainable way? Like, I think this project is really a good first one to bring through, because I think it checks all the boxes in terms of community development, infrastructure development, very future facing, great partner with the developer, and very tied in with the local community. So we feel like everyone is bringing their resources to help make this project successful. So we're enthusiastic about this project, but again, this is just the first meeting. So as we can make improvements, if there's things we can do, Ben does never not ever need to improve, but as I can make improvements, we'll do that. But we feel like we want this to be a good process you're comfortable with, but we hope this is a really good first project to be bringing to this committee.
Yeah, I like it. Can I make a comment,
Steve? Absolutely. Yeah,
it might be helpful for the committee, because these are, like, they are kind of public-private partnerships, and those require a lot of scrutiny, and perhaps rather than saving it for one public meeting, it might be helpful to have, like, another meeting up front where we get familiar with what's going on in the application and the whole process it's been on. And so when we get to this meeting, it doesn't, not have to raise all these questions necessarily in a public meeting where, you know, maybe some people might feel reserved on what to ask or whatever. It might be helpful to have some sort of a preview. And I don't, I guess if we had everybody, that would make it a public meeting.
Yeah, so open a public meeting. Well, we have to
make then it maybe it's just like materials or something that you could circulate or whatever that has a lot of that information in it so that we could review that information prior to the meeting.
That's very fair, and we can definitely commit to that. As you four know, this was put together very quickly. You're all appointed just within the last couple weeks. We're in a hurry to get this meeting done. So certainly we have lots of information on the project area itself, which would be very helpful. So certainly going forward, as we are presenting that information to the board, we can definitely share that information with this committee as well, if there's going to be an AIB application that I think will give you some of that needed background in the future.
Okay.
And when is the Inland Port Authority Board meeting next? Do you know?
May 11th.
May 11th.
Okay. Yeah.
So would that allow for another meeting of this committee before we vote? And still give you time to take that to May 11th committee.
If this committee wanted to wait to make a motion, we could look to find a time before that meeting, certainly.
Perhaps
there's more information.
A week or so, schedule another meeting.
Exactly.
Committee members, how would you feel about something along those lines?
Are you saying rather than approve the...
Rather than take a vote today, meet in a week or so, after we've had a little more time to educate ourselves, and then vote at that point?
I would be fine if there are people here that aren't comfortable with...
Okay. I mean, yeah. I just want to, if that's the case.
I think that's prepared today.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm prepared today. I guess the one thing that's not clear is that because usually, you know, like Steve, you staff legislative committees. So, you know, when they make a motion, it's like very clear what they're approving.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so,
we got Steve,
so do you guys have, so, If someone has that in writing, that it's very clear what we're approving, like, because I know in general terms, I feel good about what we're approving. So if you have that right now, and that's why, and I guess say feedback, like how I feel good about where I got through. I think like I found some of the information about the plan area and was reading a little bit before this. So I feel pretty good about what's going on, but as long as you have something that's like detailed that we know exactly what we're approving.
Well, if I make the motion, I'm going to add something to it. That's my contingency.
Okay. Great.
One more question, I guess, because you have referred to this as a public-private partnership. That comes up in statute in a few different places now. And specifically, it requires State Finance Review Commission approval if it has an obligation that can be tied back to the state in any way, right? So there are certain public-private partnership models that have that. Others do not. So I want to be clear on the fact that if we approve this today, that this public-private partnership, there's no recourse to the state if, for whatever reason, the operations fail, that this, like, there's still, DCI still has to pay the loan back, and that there's no recourse back to the state in terms of paying the loan back, right? Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Okay. Yeah.
And just quickly as well, HB 82, I think from 2022, I think is the one that creates that new body. We've been working with Treasurer Oaks to make sure that we're in compliance with that as well, not only on this program, but a number of areas where there are potential touch points. So we've been working with his office on all of it.
Well, I'm in his office, so. But if you're working with him directly, that's great.
Any other questions before we go to a motion? Any other comments from those of you at the table?
As manager with the Inland Port Authority, is taking the lead from the county, like what Ben was saying earlier, that's really where the conversations began. And so as there's the backstop, the county, this is all, you know, the county taking lead because it's their property tax increment that we're kind of being the administrator over. And I just want to kind of stress that working, you know, Danny Stewart, the economic development director down there, you know, great leader down there. And so that's just one thing I want to stress is, you know, the county taking lead. I know this is state funds with the infrastructure bank loan, but it's also, you know, that partnership with the county and the community down there. That's just one thing I wanted to stress, so.
Thank you.
Sorry, one more comment, and then we'll be ready for motion. I do, I had a recent conversation with our AG representative that's on the State Finance Review Commission, and they do take a little bit of exception with using the term bank within these revolving loan funds, so that extends to UDOT calls their revolving loan program the State Infrastructure Bank, and we're calling this the Authority Infrastructure Bank. I think that could be confusing because a bank connotates a financial institution that's subject to certain rules and regulations that we're not subject to. So I don't know. I think it might be called that in statute. I'm not sure. But anyway, I think we need to be clear that this is not a bank. It's a revolving loan program of the state. And that's very different. So just wanted to make that distinction. So
great. Good clarification. Very well. Are we at a point where somebody would like to make a motion?
I can make the motion. Okay. So my motion would be I would move to recommend the Utah Inland Port Authority approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund, worded it that way, of $10 million to BZI still / Five Star Holdings, with terms of the loan being 15 years beyond the deferral period, at a 3.5% interest rate. The 3-year deferral period would include capitalized interest to the principal, and I would make one stipulation that the contracts specify that BZI allows access to other local companies in accessing the rail, which I think is what qualifies this to receive state funds because and not be specific to the benefit of one company.
Kurt, how would you also feel about just saying that, of course, contingent on meeting all procurement laws? And I don't know, maybe that goes without saying, but being compliant with all statutory provisions.
Yes, I would amend my motion to add, and that any contracts awarded or tax increment be in compliance with state procurement laws. So.
Thank you. Do we have a second to that motion?
I'll second that.
Okay, seconded by Duncan Evans. All in favor? All in favor, say aye.
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 The vote is unanimous. All four community members present today voted in the affirmative. Okay, that concludes item number five. I believe that is the item number six is potential closed session. I do not see a need for a closed session. And item number seven is to adjourn. So any other business or a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion by Duncan Evans. Any second on that one?
Second that one.
Second by Jonathan. All in favor say aye.
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 We are adjourned. Thank you.